Hello, guys, and welcome to episode number two of Inside the BDO. We try to bring you as much information and updates from the British Darts Organisation as we can. And in this particular episode, I'm joined by Andrew Sinclair, a journalist who's worked within different sports, and it's great to have Andrew as a part of this. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Tom. How are you getting on?
Fine, very, very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just looking forward to kind of the World Championships around the corner and kind of the busy season for darts that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of BDO action lately, since September onwards, really. We've had the final event before the cut-off for the World Championships in Bridlington, and then we moved on to the Grand Slam of Darts, and it's probably this year, it's probably been the best showing from the BDO. I know Glenn Durrant didn't get through his group, which he probably should have done. They're very, very unlucky. But Wesley Harms and Mikhail Unterbuchner shining through Unterbuchner was very, very impressive.
Oh, yeah, he was great. But, I mean, the only BDO qualifier who didn't win a game was Adam Smith-Neill, and he was in a group with Michael Smith, Roma van Barneveld and Christoph Ratajski. So it's not like he was in an easy group, and all the other BDO players like did themselves proud, got some good averages in there, and looked competitive, which, considering Barry Hearn's comments about, pool three looks easier than pool four, I thought the BDO lads did well, and I thought Wesley and Michael really, really showed the BDO in a good light.
Yeah, and I think Adam Smith-Neill as well, he had darts to beat Roma van Barneveld, of course, in that game. He came back well against Michael Smith. Michael Smith missed match darts. I think it was for 5-0 or 5-1, and then Adam came back at him and really forced Smith to end it quickly, and the BDO had a great showing. Gary Robson as well, much to be said for him, he played very well as well.
Yeah, I think Gary was someone who a lot of people thought might be the whipping boy when of the BDO qualifiers, because he's been around a long time. He's never really set the world on fire as a player, but he was more than competitive. And didn't make a disgrace of himself at any point. I thought he played really well, and he beat Joe Mernon, and I thought he did a good job, Gary. So, yeah. Again, he wasn't an easy group either, with Michael Smith, Michael Van Gerwen and Johnny Clayton. So.
Yeah, and what a stunning comeback it was as well. Yeah, playing that game against Joe Mernon. Was it 4-1 to win 5-4?
I think so, yeah. It was a really impressive showing for Gary, and he's had probably the best year of his career so far. It was a nice end to the year for him as we head towards the World Championship.
Yeah, I think this year as well, the thing with Gary Robson, he's really knuckled down. He's been on the tour year after year after year without really setting the world alight. And this year, he just seems to concentrate on the game, sort of put his head down and wanted to get inside that top 10, which he has done. And it's been a great year for Robbo.
I think it all started when he kind of got into Lakeside last year, sort of through the back door. Because obviously Christoph Ratajski had got a spot through winning the Masters, but he'd already decided to go over to the PDC, so his spot was taken away, which then led Gary to getting a spot in the competition. So I think Gary from there, I think that gave him some motivation, and he got some steady results at the start of the year. And as you say, he's really knuckled down, got some consistent results on the board, consistently getting to quarterfinals, a couple of semi-finals, a few finals. And he's just put the points on the board, which in the BDO is the most important thing you can do.
Yeah, and I think, especially I mentioned Mikhail Unterbuchner there. He was fantastic. I mean, he saw off James Wade was the before the event. You know, people were tipping into when his third PDC event in a row after a 7 or 8 year wait, and he just the averages were very similar. But he just took his chance. He did a James Wade on James Wade, in my opinion, because he took his chances. When he had those chances, he took them. And that's what James Wade has made a career out of doing.
Yeah, and I thought Michael was outstanding. I think he's been one of the stars of the BDO this year, after his obviously starring performance at Lakeside. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was competitive with everyone he played. And then in the quarterfinal against Gary Anderson, he wasn't blown away, despite the fact that I think Gary's playing some of the best darts of his career at the moment. Michael kept up with him as well as most other players would have done in that situation. So I thought he did really well.
Yeah, and there was that very impressive victory over Ian White as well. That was a brilliant performance. But he's not a massive scorer. He's not a 180 hitter. He doesn't hit a lot of maximums, but he's very consistent throughout the legs. That's what, and he's very good in his finishing, what gets him those victories. And the first time I seen Mikhail was, I'm a quite a good friend of Jamie Hughes, and I remember at Lakeside the first round, and I've never really heard of him and expected Jamie to win the game, maybe not as convincingly, but I thought he would win the game, and that really did shock a few people and sort of made people watch this guy.
Yeah, I remember he got a 9 data in the Czech Open towards the back end of 2017, which kind of was the first time I'd seen his name. And then he got through the qualifiers and went to Lakeside. He played, I think it was David Cameron in the preliminary round, and it was a really scratchy performance. There was nothing there that indicated to me that he'd be really close to Jamie Hughes. And I think, yeah, as you say, that Jamie Hughes performance then in the first round was really impressive. And then from then on, he was able to build and build and build until obviously he lost in the semi-final to Mark McGeaney. And then he went on from there and he got to the final of the World Trophy in June, where again, he was really impressive. I think he's kind of been like a really good find for the BDO in a way, because he's shown some real talent and he's part of this wave of new German players coming through.
Yeah, I think as well, the transition from match play to set play, some players can benefit it, because it's sort of, they're used to playing best of five, best of seven leg matches, or very short matches. So if you base that on one set, it's just like winning a match, like each mini session, they call it a set. But some players it affects them, some players they thrive on it. I know Scott Waite thrives on the set play. Glenn Durren, there's so many players that love the World Championship and the World Masters for that set play.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, yeah, they are very different styles. And I think with something like the Grand Slam, where it's best of nine legs, it's very easy to get blown away, because it's only nine leg. It's an only best of nine leg fixture. So if you suddenly lose a couple of legs on the spin, you're already quite close to the brink of defeat. And it can look like a really bad defeat, even though you've averaged a very similar score to the other player.
Yeah, so moving on, we've had a few other events in the BDO. We've had the Malta Open just this past week. Can you bring us up to date with that?
Yeah, so John Michael, a Greek player who's qualified for the PDC World Championship a couple of times, he took home the Malta Open title, beating Andy Hamilton in the final. That was Andy's second final on the BDO Tour since he kind of moved over there this year. So it was a good showing from him. And then the two defeated semi-finalists were Dave Parletti, who will obviously be making his Lakeside debut in just over a month's time, and Tony O'Shea. And that was a really good run for Tony, because he's not had a particularly strong year on the tour. So it was good to see him get a semi-final in a reasonably competitive field. And just again, post some more points on the board and like get him into some form before we hit Lakeside.
Yeah, I'm a big supporter of Dave Parletti. He was on the last episode of Inside the BDO, and he's a fan of the show. And he's had a very, very good year. He's reached multiple finals, won a few tournaments himself, and he's been really impressive. His scoring for me is absolutely phenomenal. Maybe when it's come to the gilt-edge moments in matches, he's sort of missed a double, which can be crucial. I remember the game with Kyle McKinstry in Bridlington. I think they both averaged 108, 109, and it was an absolutely superb game. And Dave was right up there in the scoring with Kyle, and it was just, I think it was one missed dart at double for 108, I think it was. Then Kyle took out the finish. So Dave can really, really bring it to Lakeside, and he's a real outside chance of going far in the tournament.
Oh, definitely. I think he's a really talented player. He's had a really strong year, and he'll definitely be one to watch. I think, yeah, in Malta he came up a little bit short against Andy Hamilton, but I think Dave's got a really good chance. And obviously we're going to talk about the draw in a bit, but he could have had a much more difficult first round opponent than the one he's got. So I think Dave's definitely within a good chance at Lakeside, and he's been another really good find this year for the BDO.
Yeah, it could be a slow transition as well for these players who have not really been on TV a lot, because obviously they're used to playing match after match after match after match in one day, and moving to Lakeside where you've just got one game in a day, can they adjust to that? I think Dave could do that.
I think that what you talk about there about playing several games in one day, I think someone who has not struggled that in the past, but it's been very different for them, is someone like Richard Veenstra, who can be on his day absolutely unplayable, and he'll win 6, 7, 8 games in a row to win a tournament. But he's also the sort of person who could get caught cold and go out in the first round. And I think Richard just playing one game and then a day or so off and then another game, he's often struggled to build form. But he's obviously had some good runs at Lakeside before. And I think, yeah, it's a difficult transition for a lot of the players. But it can also provide some really entertaining contests as well, because it's about who can cling on often for those like last leg deciders.
Yeah, at the weekend as well, we had the Finder Italian Grandmasters as well. Could you bring us up to date with that?
Yeah, so on the Saturdays, the Italian Grandmasters was upgraded this year to a Category A competition, and that brought a much stronger field. So you had Scott Mitchell, Scott Waits, Gary Robson was involved, Tony O'Shea. Wesley Harms was the number one seed, and he won the tournament again for the third year in a row. So that's some more strong points for Wesley. It's his third ranking title of the year, and for my money, I think he's one of my picks to potentially go all the way at Lakeside. I think he's playing probably the best darts of his career at the moment, and he did the business. He beat Mario van den Bogaard, the Belgian player in the final, and Mario's another one who's had a stunning year. He retired from darts almost a decade ago to concentrate on working as a builder, and he came back at the start of this year. And reaching the final on Saturday was his fourth final since coming back in May. And obviously it was his fourth final, and he has won one of those in Luxembourg. So he's a player who's not played much of the tour this year, but's already into the top 30. So that was a good win for Wesley, and I think he came from 4-1 down to win in the end as well. So that was a nice comeback for him. And on the Sunday, we had the Italian Open, a new Category C competition for this year. And that a low-quality final was won by Wolfie. He averaged 71, but eventually came back to win the final 6-5, and it was his first ranking title since the Dutch Open in February 2016.
Fantastic. It was, I think as well, when you play so many games, I mean, the competition in Malta was the midweek, wasn't it? And then they moved straight on to Italy, so it was a hectic couple of days for the guys, and It must be so tiring as well to play so many events in one day and then straight on to the next day. And they are early starts as well. They can start at 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, some of these events.
And I think quite a few of the players had played in the Czech Open the week before as well. So it suddenly becomes an even longer week, especially if you aren't playing particularly well. I think it could be quite a difficult week away from home and kind of trying to find a bit of form. And as you say, early starts, a lot of travelling, a lot being kind of unsettled and stuff. It is quite difficult, but there were a lot of points on offer for those players as well, which I guess is the motivation. It's the last chance, really, unless you've qualified for the Finder Masters in December, to get some form and get a real kind of match play sense of where you're at before the World Championships. So yeah, you saw quite a few of the big names playing with varying levels of success. And another player who's in action was Adam Smith-Neill. He got to the quarterfinals on Saturday and then suffered a foot injury, which has required surgery and means he'll be in a race to try and make Lakeside. And if he does, the question will be, is he at 100%?
And before we move on to the BDO 2019 BDO World Darts Championship, let's just take a look at some of the outright betting odds with the bookies. Glenn Durrant, the obvious favourite, 6-5 there. Mikhail Unterbuchner, is he a good shout at 10-1, Andrew?
I think so. I think he's in a slightly easy. I don't want to say easier half of the draw, but he's seeded fifth for the tournament, which means he avoids Glenn Durrant. And there's a potentially tasty quarterfinal between him and Wesley Harms in prospect. I think there's definitely good value in Michael, but at the same time, I'd personally say there's really good value in Wesley Harms. He reached the semi-finals in two of his first visits to Lakeside and then has suffered a number of first-round exits since then. But I think Wesley's on some really good form at the moment. I think he is a sort of 16-1, that kind of area. I think there's good value in him, definitely, and for Michael as well.
It's certainly a lot bigger than 16-1. You can get Wesley Harms at 28-1 at the minute.
Blimey, wow.
Yeah, also, Jim Williams is a huge one at 28-1, which really surprises me because Jim has been the top four players in the BDO now, where you think he's going to push on, he's going to win the next major title. He had a good appearance at the Grand Slam as well. He was unlucky not to get through the group phase. Yeah. I remember last year at the Finder Masters where he beat Glenn Durrant with 110 average, if you remember that one. Another one of Jim's performances. And 28-1 is a very very good price.
I think that is good value for Jim, but I think Jim is another one of those who's quite hard to predict. Some days he's absolutely unplayable and some days he's quite bang average. And I think in the World Championships, if you're bang average, you can get found out. And again, he is in the same half of the draw as Glenn Durrant. So he doesn't have the best record against Glenn, who's obviously a very good friend of his. So that might explain the high price, but there's definitely value there, especially if there's some upsets in that half of the draw. I think Jim's a talented player and he is waiting for that breakout moment. So I think that there's definitely good value in him.
Yeah, I'll just quickly run through a few of the other odds for some of the other top-ranked players. Mark McGeaney, 12-1, which is a good price. Scott Mitchell, 18-1. Dave Parletti, 25-1. Kyle McKinstry, 25-1. Andy Hamilton, 25-1. Wesley Harms, 28-1, as we mentioned there. Paul Hogan, a massive outsider at 50-1. Adam Smith, Neil. Now, there's been a lot of stuff on social media about his injury that occurred. He's got a pin in his foot and it's very doubtful now whether he'll even play it. He insists that he will play at the Lakeside, but surely he can't be 100% by the time the Lakeside World Championship comes around, Andrew.
Oh, totally. And in the preliminary round, he's got Mark McGrath, New Zealander, who has been in the World Series competitions the last couple of years. He played at Lakeside before and he's a really good player. So if Adam's not 100%, he could well go down to Mark, and if he does win that, he's got Glenn Durrant awaiting him in the first round. So he really does need to be as close to 100% as possible if he is going to play. But obviously, him having won the World Masters, having to start at the very first round to win it, to qualify for the Grand Slam and qualify for Lakeside, you know that he really wants to be there. As you say, him being 100%, you've got to question it.
Yeah, there's another one that surprises me as well, the odds. We've got Wes Newton, 66-1. This is a former top five player in the PDC who's been at the top of his game for so many years. And it's strange the way, I think injury played a big part as well to his look down the rankings in the PDC system. But you don't lose that ability. And Wes Newton is a top, top player still. And 66-1 is a bit of a write-off for me. He's still got the talent and he's still got the game.
Oh, I think for both Wes and Andy Hamilton, I was really pleased this year that when they lost their tour cards, they actually went over to the BDO and used that to kind of get back to basics, find their form and get back to playing kind of their really best level. You see a lot of players lose the tour card and then go on the challenge tour, which works for some players, but it doesn't work for others. And there can often be long months at a time where you're not playing any darts at all, or any really competitive darts, so you know where you're playing. And I was really pleased that Wes and Andy came over to the BDO. They played a lot of tournaments. Wes got to a couple of finals, a fair few semi-finals as well. And he looked to be getting back to his best. So I think, to be honest, I think for him and Andy, qualifying for Lakeside was massive, and I'm not sure whether I feel they can go all the way, but it's a really feel good story for both of them that they've managed to kind of get back to the level we saw them at a few years ago when they were Premier League players. And Wes will start in the preliminary round against Paul Hogan, which should be a right ding dong. That should be absolutely brilliant. One of the games I'm really looking forward to in the first round.
Yeah, and the ladies' side of things, the BDO World Championship. What did you make of Lisa and Anastasia qualifying for the PDC World Championship? There's a sort of uncertainty as well, because the BDO haven't really come out and said that you can't play in the Lakeside or they can, because there's not really been any clear indication of what's going to happen.
No, there's not, and I don't think that's really helpful. I think the kind of new administration running the BDO at the moment have been a lot better in transparency and openness and telling people things. But yeah, the ladies haven't had a tremendous amount of clarity. But that aside, I'm absolutely thrilled for Lisa and Anastasia because they deserve those opportunities. They really do. And to be honest, I wasn't surprised. They have been, for the last few years, the two best female darts players in the world. So I wasn't shocked at all that they were the two who qualified. they both thoroughly deserve it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can both do. And obviously, the women were the big talking point for the Grand Slam as well. There was a lot of kind of uproar about whether Lisa should have been one of the BDO's representatives at the Grand Slam. And I personally think, yeah, the criteria should be changed, because on her day, Lisa Ashton is absolutely brilliant. And I'm really pleased for her qualifying for the World Championships, and hopefully it can lead to something more for ladies darts, so they get the recognition and the money that their talents deserve.
Yeah, of course, being from Bolton myself, the same town as Lisa Ashton, I've seen her play on many occasions, and she's used to being, she grew up with 2-3 brothers, and she used to beat them, and that's what made her want to play this game and take it seriously. And she played in the Challenge Tour this year in the PDC. She got to the quarterfinals of Challenge Tour events. So you're playing against people who've just lost the tour cards and gaining confidence from that. So playing men does not bother Lisa one bit. And she faces Jan Dekker at the World Championships, and I will not write Lisa off one bit in that game.
I think she's got a great chance. Jan's not had a particularly strong year. And I think she'll be properly up for it. She's playing on the first night, I think, if I remember correctly. And yeah. I think she's got a really, really good chance of winning that game. And Anastasia is against Ryan Joyce, who got his tour card at the start of the year and started the kind of the Pro Tour events really well, racking up a load of money. But I think again, she could be competitive in that as well. But yeah, I really wouldn't be shocked to see Lisa beat Jan Dekker in the first round game.
Yeah, I think moving back to the BDO World Championship as well, we've got some of the odds here. Obviously, Lisa and Anastasia and Dita are the three favourites. But looking outside of that, Lorraine Winstanley's had a superb year, and 10-1's a very good price for Lorraine because she's been playing so well.
Yeah, no, it is a good price. But I think, again, she's another one like Jim Williams where we're really waiting for her to have that breakout moment. That moment where she proves she can get over the line in the big tournaments against your Dieters and your Anastasias and your Fallon Sherricks and your Lisa Ashtons, which we haven't really seen from her yet. And you can play brilliantly all year, but it's on that stage in front of those TV cameras that you need to really kick on. So I think there's good value there for Lorraine. And she's in probably the slightly easier half of the women's draw. And she'll be playing Casey Gallagher in the first round, which will be a really tight game, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the most astonishing things for me in the ladies' game is Dieter Hedman, because she's won over 200 titles in the BDO, 200. And yet to win a world championship, it's so baffling because she is so good. And then sort of, she can't go out and quite get over that line when it comes to Lakeside.
Oh, I agree with you, yeah. I think she's sort of like Tony O'Shea of the women's game in the sense that all the talent in the world has been to those finals and just hasn't quite been able to do it. But often with Dieter at Lakeside, it's sort of been feast or famine. She's either gone out in the first round in a bit of a shock, or she's got to the final and then just not quite had enough. And she's starting this year against Maria O'Brien, who she played in the, I think it was the semi-finals of the women's qualifier just last weekend. And she had a 100% record against Maria before that game. And Maria's had a really strong year as well. I was really impressed with her when I saw her at the World Trophy. So I think that's a really tight game. I wouldn't be shocked to see Dieter go out in the first round, but at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked to see her make it to the semi-finals or the final again.
Yeah, we spoke about Dave Parlett as well before, Andrew, and there's another player who, in the ladies' game, who I think is very similar to Dave in the sense that she's sort of been out of range the last couple of years. She was yet to win a BDO event, but this year she did win her first big ranking event, Laura Turner, and I've been very, very impressed with that. She's been playing, and she can definitely give it a bash at the Lakeside. And looking at the bookies' odds, it's embarrassing, really. 425-1. In your first Lakeside when you've won a major BDO event, and they really have wrote her off, but you can never write her off because she's beaten the best players in the world on it. She beat Anastasia in the final. She's beat Lisa Ashton in the same event, so she can beat the world's best.
Oh, I think, yeah, those odds, when I saw them the other day, I thought they were absolutely horrendous. Because she's, I think that the next kind of rank outsider was Paula Jacklin, and she was about 100-1. And it's not as though Paula is leaps and bounds ahead of Laura in terms of ability. But obviously Laura in first round play is playing Anastasia, and depending on how Anastasia is after the PDC, if she's really motivated from that, or if it takes it out of her, you never know. But I think that's a really tight game, and I think it's a testament to the growth of the women's game, because I think all of the games in the first round are really competitive. And the standout tie to me is Lisa Ashton against Mikuru Suzuki, the Japanese soft tip kind of legend, because she came over for the World Masters and the qualifier. She qualified with ease, and she got to the quarterfinals of the World Masters, and I think she got to the semi-finals of the Women's International PDC qualifier as well. She is a properly talented player. So although Lisa is the red-hot favourite, and you'd feel bad ever backing against her, I think her against Suzuki, you could be quite easily seeing the winner of that as the winner of the tournament, for my money anyway.
Yes, quite possibly. And yeah, I have heard of her straight away. She got snapped up by Target more or less straight away. She's been the spearhead for Asian women, Asian darts, ladies darts, and I would not write her off. And within those players, Lorraine Winstanley, Lisa Ashton, Dieter Hedman, any of them can win this tournament. And I would love for an outsider, Paula Jacqueline, Laura Turner, such as like, to reach the semis or the final. It would be great for women darts, because we've more or less had the... We've had Trina Gulliver, 10 times world champion, Lisa Ashton now 4 times, Anastasia. So we're ready for a new winner on the Lakeside stage.
Yeah, and I think the ties are all really competitive, and I would love us to see some shocks in the first round and see some of those big names go out, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do. I think, as you say, Laura Turner's had a really breakthrough year for her. Suzuki, as I said, is someone I rate really highly. You've got Corinne Hammond, former world finalist. She's playing Fallon Sherrick in the first round. That'll be a good game. Casey Gallagher, another really talented player. She's obviously playing Lorraine, as I said. And Trina Gulliver's taking on Karolina Podgorska, who's the leading Polish female darts player, the other qualifier for the World Masters weekend. And she's another really talented one. I wouldn't be surprised to see her go through as well. So it's nice to see some fresh faces. And I really think the ladies' competition could be really exciting this year.
So let's quickly move on to the draw bracket for the 2019 Lakeside World Championship. Starting with the men's preliminary round, we've got two Aussies battling it out in the very first game, Mal Cumming and Justin Thompson. That should be an interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're going to know each other well from the Darts Australia Tour. So I think they'll know each other well, and they'll probably kind of have a feeling backstage of who's got the edge. But I just want to give a mention to Justin Thompson. He is the first Australian to qualify through the main ranking table, not the regional qualifiers. He's the first Australian to qualify through the main ranking system since 2011, which, considering the only tournaments outside Australia Justin's played have been the World Championships and the World Trophy, is a tremendous achievement to his consistency over the year. So I think Justin's probably the favourite there, but I don't think many of us have seen much of Mal Cumming, so he could be another surprise when it comes to January.
Yeah, and then we've got Brian Locken versus Krzysztof Ciuk, and from Poland. He did very well to get through the qualifiers in Bridlington.
Yeah, I think Krzysztof's a good player. He played in the PDC Championships a few years ago, I believe, as well. And he practices with Krzysztof Rutajski, as far as I know. So he's definitely got a good practice partner, if that's the case. And Brian Locken, I think, was one of the Danish qualifiers when the PDC went to Denmark in the European Tour. I think they're both quite solid, but I think Krzysztof's probably the more talented of the two, from what I can tell. So probably the favourite, but I think that's going to be one of quite a few kind of pick'em contests in that preliminary round.
Yeah, I think the standout one for me is the next one, Paul Hogan and Wes Newton. That is an absolute blockbuster prelim game.
Oh, that's outstanding. Paul qualifying as the British Isles rep, because he basically only plays in the UK. But, I mean, the last time Paul was at Lakeside, he had that absolutely phenomenal contest with Glenn Durrant. Well, I was convinced Glenn was finished a couple of times in that game, and obviously kind of staged a stirring comeback to win. So that was a great game. And as I said earlier, Wes has had a phenomenal year so far, and I think he'll be properly up for it. So that should be, as you say, a brilliant game.
And then we've got David Cameron, the Canadian, who's been in a lot of the BDO events. He did qualify. I think he qualified for the Las Vegas PDC as well this year. I'm sure he got in the last eight there, and he takes on Andy Hamilton. And that should be another cracking game.
Yeah, I think that this is Dave Cameron's sixth appearance at Lakeside, and he's only won his preliminary round game once so far. And he's playing kind of a former World Championship finalist, a former Premier League player, and Andy Hamilton. So that's definitely a great game for him, and a really great opportunity for Andy Hamilton as well to kick on, make that first round. I think that's another really competitive game.
Yeah, and then we've got the Serbian Oliver Ferenc. He plays Ryan Hogarth of Scotland. I've seen quite a bit of Ryan over the years. He's quite an impressive player.
Yeah, Ryan's someone I'm really high on. As an honorary Scot, having lived here a few years, I feel I've got to support him. But he qualified for the World Trophy, and from then he's really just kicked on. World Trophy, beat Gary Robson in the first round and shocked a few people. And then from there, he's played in the UK events, reached a couple of quarterfinals, and recently went over to the Czech Open and made the quarterfinal there as well. So Ryan's a really talented player. And Oliver's not played much of the tour. He qualified from doing well in Hungary, kind of at the back end of 2017, but hasn't really done much of note since then in like many competitive competitions. So he's one who's quite hard to get a read on. But I think that's a really interesting tie, and I think Ryan Hogarth could be a real shocker for people, just how good he is.
Yes, and if he can come through that game, Scott Mitchell awaits in the first round.
Not exactly an easy assignment for either of them, but yeah, I think Ryan will thrive on that challenge and really make a name for himself.
And the next one, another Aussie, the New Zealander Mark McGrath. He takes on Adam Smith-Neill, who we talked about earlier, might not be 100% there. And that should be interesting to see how the match pans out.
Yeah, I think that one's going to be a hard one to call, because if Adam's not 100%, or even if Adam is 100%, Mark's a very talented player. He's been at Lakeside before, so the big TV environment's not going to fluster him. He's played in a couple of the World Series events too, and they've got phenomenal crowds, and he's played some of the PDC's best. So I think Mark's a really a live dog in that contest. He might not even be the underdog. If Adam's not 100%, then Mark could well go into that as the favourite. And I think the other question I would have is, if Adam isn't available, who would come in to replace him?
Yeah, I'm not really sure how they're going to work that out, because obviously they had the qualifiers in Bridlington, and I know Andy Hamilton got in, didn't he, at the last minute, because he didn't actually qualify originally, did he? He had to rely on the ranking system.
Well, I think Andy was the provisional qualifier if the World Master had already qualified, but because his position was a bit iffy, he went into the qualifiers and came through that system, which then put Wes Newton into the standby spot. But then obviously Adam kind of took the field by storm, beat Glenn Durrant and beat a number of other top players to win the World Masters, which meant then Wes was out of contention. But when they announced there wouldn't be an Asian representative this year, Wes then came in. But yeah, if Adam drops out, I assume it'd be the next highest ranked player at the time that the cutoff happened. But I can't remember who that would be, so it'll be interesting. But as I said before, this is a massive opportunity for Adam, and I think he will be 100% determined to make sure he's at Lakeside by whatever means necessary.
Yeah, I think another potentially blockbusting game could be Jim Widmer, the American from New York City. He takes on Nigel Hayden. Nigel Hayden is a player that I've been very, very impressed with for so many years. Plays his county darts for Warwickshire. I've seen him post numerous 100-plus averages. He's been on the PDC circuit as well. He's such a strong player, and that could really be a tough game for Widmer.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Jim's been at Lakeside a couple of times before. But yeah, Nigel came into that qualifying Bridlington and just absolutely blew through the field, qualified with relative ease. And he's a really talented player, and I think he's someone not enough people are talking about in the run-up to the competition. And if he can get through that tie, it'll be a game against Richard Veenstra, who have said he's quite an inconsistent player. And I wouldn't be shocked to see maybe Nigel make quite a deep run into the competition if he can demonstrate the form that we know he's capable of.
Yeah, and then the final prelim match is featuring Belgium's Roger Janssen. He takes on Wouter Vaas, and I've seen him before, Vaas, at the tournament in December that used to be called the Zwijderduin Masters. It's now the Finder Darts Masters. I've seen quite a bit of him.
Yeah, I'm not... Wouter's a nice guy, but he's one of those players who really, really seems to struggle on the stage. Mm-hmm. The World Masters, he was really disappointing. His game was a real slog. He was at Lakeside before, and again, I don't think he cracked 80 in his averages. And I think he did win his first ranking event this year in Antwerp, but he's not a player who thrives on the stage. So I think he could well struggle, whereas he's playing a guy in Roger Janssen who I think is a really good player, and he's had his best year on the tour by far. He won two events, he won in Austria and then he won in Luxembourg. And Roger's a really good player, and he showed at the World Masters that he can put the big scores on the board and really, really put his name up there. And he got a bit nervous when he was at Lakeside last time, but I think he's got that stage experience now, and he's playing some really good darts. I would say that Roger is probably the heavy favourite in that one, or he at least is for my money.
Like you say, the quality, if the quality does lack in that match, then they really have to up it for the next game, because Jim Williams, a number three seed, follows that one.
Oh, yeah. I think whoever wins that has got a very tough assignment on their hands, but I think if Wouter can get his first kind of big stage win in that sense, then he might be much more comfortable to play Jim. But I think either of them will struggle against Jim, because he is a really talented player, and he deserves that number three seed for the fact he's won five ranking titles this year.
Yeah, and just looking at the top half of the draw at Lakeside, the number one seed Mark Beghini takes on Dirk Telnekers of the Netherlands, and we've seen a bit of Dirk, haven't we? He's been a bit hot and cold, hasn't he, on the stage?
Yeah, Dirk's the youngest player in the competition. He's only sort of 23. And I think he's prodigiously talented. Last time he qualified for Lakeside this year, he beat Chris Landman in the preliminaries and then lost to Gert De Vos in the first round. But I think Dirk's a really talented player, and I don't think him beating Mark Beghini is out of the question at all. I think if he turns up and plays his A game, I think Mark will have a real fight on his hands.
And then we've got the number 16 seed, Martin Phillips, taking on Conan Whitehead. And Conan Whitehead's another player who's been steady on the tour, won several events, and he's not quite pushed on to that level now where he's looking to push for a major title, but he has played well in spells.
Yeah, I think Conan's definitely got the talent, and he showed that at Lakeside last year. He beat I think it was Cameron Menzies in the first round, and showed his class there. And I think Martin Phillips hasn't had a great year. He won in Romania right after the World Championships in January, and then after that he's barely done anything of note. And I think age may be starting to catch up with Martin a little bit. I know he's stepped back with his commitments from Wales and stuff, but I think Conan has got a really good chance to win that and have it be a really good opponent for either Dirk or Mark Beghini.
Yeah, you'd feel now as well that Martin Phillips is probably coming towards the end of his career. But what a career it's been for him. He's, looking back, he's got a lot to look back on with that World Masters win, especially a couple of years ago when he beat Jamie Hughes in the final. That was his last great achievement.
Yeah, and I mean, this is his 16th Lakeside appearance. You don't achieve that without being a player of real class and real quality. So yeah, Martin's been a brilliant servant of the game and a brilliant servant of the BDO. So it'd be nice to see him have another few good runs in him, but I'm not sure whether he will this time round.
Yeah, there's a player for me that obviously hasn't qualified for Lakeside. I've not really seen him a lot this year. Dennis Harbour, he was quite impressive over the last two or three seasons. He was playing some very consistent darts, and he seems to have fizzled out.
Yeah, I think Dennis is just... I think the tournaments he has played this year, I think he's one of those that tends to stick to the UK because he doesn't like going too far from home, and he's just not had the run of results that he maybe has in the last few years. Some difficult draws, but he is still another player who's very talented, and he's also kind of got the mental aspect of it nailed down with his very slow throw and kind of... Yeah, I remember a few players have said that Dennis Harbour's not the easiest person to play against.
Yeah, he's very, very consistent. He's definitely a 140 man throughout legs, and he's very steady. And because he's a bit slower, a bit more methodical, he can be a handful to play against as well, I imagine.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Dennis is one of those talented players that isn't in the draw this time round. But there's a few of kind of the old faces that we haven't got. Obviously, Wolfie. This is the first time since Wolfie made his debut in 1994 that Wolfie won't be in the draw either, because he's been struggling with his arthritis and he's not played very many competitions. But as I was saying earlier, he managed to win in Italy. Yeah, it wasn't a great performance, but he's still some good points on the board. He's got himself back into the BDO top 50 with that win, and obviously he'll be looking to kick on in the Netherlands in December. But yeah, hopefully we can see Harbour, Adams, maybe Ted Hanke kind of getting back to their best next year. Andy Fordham as well is another one that you'd like to see kind of finding some good darts again and getting back to where they were a few years ago.
Yeah, and we've got the another batch of first round matches. Richard Veenstra plays Jim Wedmayer or Nigel Hayden, and the winner of that, Scott Waits or Jeffrey Van Egdom of Belgium. Van Egdom's been, he's had a solid year. I've heard quite a lot about Jeffrey, and he's he'll definitely give Scott Waits a game, but it could potentially be a Richard Veenstra Scott Waits second round encounter, and that could be fantastic to watch.
Yeah, I think Jeffrey's been very steady. He's the sort of player who gets to the last 16 of almost every competition he's in, but he's not really kicked on and had that breakthrough performance yet. And I mean, there's no real better first round opponent to really make a name for yourself in your Lakeside debut than Scott Waits, a man who's won the competition a couple of times before, one of the BDO's best players. Obviously, won the Grand Slam in 2010. Scott's a brilliant player, and I think Scott against Richard in the last 16 would be a proper quality contest.
The next lot of matches, Mikhail Hunter-Buckner, who's talking about before, he plays the winner of the two Aussies, Cumming and Thompson, and Wayne Warren and Mark Layton, the two Welshmen, battle it out in the other order of the bracket there. So it could be Hunter-Buckner against Wayne Warren potentially. And Wayne Warren is really took these games seriously the last couple of years. He's doing the full tour now where he didn't before. He's got some financial help now, and he can really throw darts well, can Wayne Warren, and that potentially. A Wayne Warren onto book in the second round game, that could be another fantastic game to watch.
Oh yeah, I think he's another one who qualifying for the World Championships, be it the PDC or be it Lakeside, can really be all the impetus you need to make you realise that this darts game's worth a good old crack. And I think Wayne qualified for the World Championship last year, was absolutely outstanding, obviously beat Wesley Harms in the first round, and went out in the quarterfinals in the end. But Wayne had a really good show in there, and he's played regularly throughout the year, consistently being a threat. No, he's not broken through and won a tournament yet, but he has got to a couple of finals, and I think he's very, very talented, and I think he'll be fairly pleased with it, a tie against Mark Layton, who hasn't done a tremendous amount for most of the year. And Mark Layton's also the oldest player in the draw at 61.
Yeah, Wayne Warren, like you say, he must have had a good year to get to the number 12 seed. So that sort of highlights how well he's played without making a major breakthrough. And Wesley Harms takes on Tony O'Shea. Now, Tony O'Shea, the silverback, has been in many Lakesides. And over the last few years, he's had his injury problems, which has really sort of put him off. But it's great to see him back at the Lakeside again. And he could potentially face William Mandiggers against Paul Hogan or Wes Newton. I can't really decide that one between Mandiggers and the Hogan-Newton bracket, because Mandiggers for me can play hot and cold on the Lakeside stage. You see him hit 12, 13 dart legs and then goes missing for a couple of legs. And Hogan or Newton could easily see off the number 13 seed. But Wesley Harms, Tony O'Shea, that's going to be a cracker.
Yeah, I think Wesley Tony's the final game on the Saturday night to start the tournament. And what a way to end the first day that'll be. As I said earlier, I think for me, it's hard to look past Glenn Durrant, but for me, Wesley Harms is my pick. Of the players this year, I think Wesley's the one who's really kicked on the most. And I think against Tony, that should be a great game. But I could see Wesley winning that. And then, as you say, the Mandiggers, Hogan Newton, picking a winner there is a minefield, because Willem's not a big scorer, and he's not the most consistent player, but he's kind of James Wade-esque in the sense that he'll plod along, and sometimes that's enough in tight games. But yeah, I think Hogan Newton's definitely the star attraction in that element. And any combination of Paul Hogan, Tony O'Shea, Wesley Arms, Paul Hogan, Tony O'Shea, Wes Newton, I think that's going to be a cracking second round tie.
You're on next in the draw bracket with the number two seed, back-to-back BDO world champion, Glenn Durren, and he faces either Mark McGrath or Adam Smith-Neill. If he takes on Smith-Neill, it could be a repeat of the World Masters final, and that was certainly an excellent final. And if Adam's well and fit enough and gets through his prelim round, then we could be in for an excellent encounter.
Yeah, I agree. I think Glenn was really disappointed to lose that World Masters final. You could tell that. So he'll definitely be looking for a little bit of revenge if it has Adam. But, you know, Glenn, he's a business-like professional player who comes there to get the job done, and you know he'll want to win a third Lakeside title before trying Q School, as we assume, in January. So yeah, I think Glenn's very hard to look past, no matter who he's against.
Yeah, I think watching that final, looking back, I've seen Adam play a few times, and in that final he sort of seemed to be slowing his game right down. He seemed to be walking slow to the board, taking his darts out, a bit more methodical in his play, and I've not... Ever since then, I've not seen him play anything like that. Do you think that was a sort of tactic against Durren?
I think so, yeah, because I think he probably realised that Glenn was just... Glenn played tremendous darts throughout that entire tournament, so I think maybe he thought he'd got to try something a little bit different, and maybe that a slower game might give Glenn more time to think and might lead to him making a couple more mistakes, which, in a format like the World Masters, it's only a couple of mistakes and you've lost a set, and then the game can get away from you. And I think Adam was really, really impressive in that final, probably his most impressive performance in the entire tournament, because he was behind for quite a while and then kind of came through, and once he went in front there was no looking back. So yeah, if he's fully fit and ready to take on Glenn, that could be a brilliant game, and it could go either way. But you've still got to favour Glenn, haven't you, on that Lakeside stage? He absolutely loves it up there.
Yeah, he absolutely thrives on pressure as well on that stage, and he absolutely adores being back-to-back BDO world champion. He will face either Ross Montgomery or Scott Baker. Now, in this one, I really do fancy Scott Baker to cause an upset to number 15 seed here, because Ross hasn't really had a great year, has he?
Well, I think, to be honest, if you're being honest, I think Ross has had a dreadful year. He was number 5 seed for Lakeside last year, and he only just about clung on to a seeded place this time round. He reached the semi-finals at the World Trophy, and I thought he played some really good darts, but he never really kicked on from there. There's been a lot of early exits in tournaments that he did well in last year, which has seen his ranking points drop. But yeah, I think Ross is a good player, but he's not at his best at the moment. He's taken on a player in Scott who was flirting with the ranking, the top 16 for a lot of the year, and Scott actually won a couple of tournaments during the year as well. He took the titles at the German Masters and the Wolverhampton Classic. So I think Scott's definitely a really good player when he's on. I would not be shocked at all. I think he's probably my pick to go through there and face the winner of Durren or McGrath or Smith-Neill.
Yes, and next in the draw bracket, we have a Robbo who was talking about earlier, Gary Robson. He faces either David Cameron or Andy Hamilton. Now, if Andy Hamilton does come through, which you sort of expect him to edge that one, if he does play Gary Robson, the number 7 seed, that should be a great first round match.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, 100%. I think that's a tough tie for Gary, but also a tough tie for Andy as well. And it'll be a test of how well Andy's really playing if he can get through against Dave Cameron and then goes up on that stage against Gary Robson. I think that's a tight game, and I don't think I can really pick a winner at this point.
Yeah, and we've got another potential upset on the card as well. Kyle McKinstry now is a player who I've been a massive fan of, a huge fan. And I think it looks like he will be giving PDC Q School a crack in January, because he is that good a player. Obviously, the same management team as likes of Daryl Gurney and James Wilson. So he is an extremely strong player, like the game with Dave Paletti we was discussing earlier. He takes on Chris Landman, the Dutchman, who is another hot and cold player. He's the number 10 seed, so he's obviously had a consistent year, but the games I've seen him play, he's just been up and down, up and down.
Yeah, Chris is another one who, kind of like Willem Mandigers, he's not a big scorer, which in a lot of BDO competitions, as long as you kind of hit the doubles and are always in and around legs, you can plod your way through and pick up consistent points. But in the big tournaments against the really good players, it's often not enough. And like you, I really, really rate Kyle. And I think he got a tough draw last year as well. He got Richard Veenstra in the first round last year. But I wouldn't be shocked to see Kyle go through that one and then face the winner of Gary Robson or maybe Dave Cameron, Randy Hamilton. And that would be another cracking game. And I think Kyle was probably good money to make quite a deep run in this competition. If he's playing some good darts and he's motivated, I think he could well be in with a shout of going quite deep.
Yeah, exactly. It could be Gary Robson. If Kyle does come through, that it could potentially be Andy Hamilton or Gary Robson / David Cameron. So that could be a potentially great second round game. And then, of course, if he does get to the semi of the quarterfinals, it could be Glenn Turan, Ross Montgomery, Scott Baker, or Adam Smith Neal. So that's another half of the draw, what's could be wide open.
Yeah, definitely. There are a lot of great players across the draw.
And then we've got Scott Mitchell, plays the winner of Ryan Hogarth or the Serbian Ferenc. And the winner of that one will take on Dave Paoletti or Brian Locken or the Pole Christoph Schuch. And Dave Paoletti against Scott Mitchell potentially in round two. That has got to be one of the games of the tournament for me, because Dave Paoletti, I watched, he's played Scott Mitchell on the TV a few times, and the last time I seen him play, he came within a leg of beating Scott, and he missed the bullseye for a 170, I think, in the deciding leg. And Dave has pushed all the pros on the TV. He's beaten all these guys week in, week out, though, in tournaments which are non-streamed and stuff like that. I remember he beating Martin Adams 4-0 in an event. He's beaten the world's best players on a consistent basis, but sort of when it's come to the quarterfinals, which are streamed in events, he's got close to the line but couldn't quite get over it. But I do think Dave he's had a terrible ordeal over the last 12 months. He was hospitalised for 35 days in Prague, and it really did set him back. He was really not well, and to come back this year the way he has been absolutely exemplary, because he reached two finals in Wolverhampton, won one, lost in the other final. I think it was Scott Baker on that occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he's played so well over the year. To come back from being in hospital for over a month, being really unwell, couldn't practice or anything like that, with full-time work as well as a postman. But to do that and to compete against the guys and record 100-plus averages, event after event in long days, I really do rate Dave highly, and what he's done this year is he fully deserves a Lakeside spot.
Oh yeah, I think Dave's absolutely brilliant. He's flirted with the top 10 as well on a couple of occasions, and yeah, as you say, coming back from the illness he had at the start of the year and kind of balance it with a full-time job, which a lot of these players do, and I think that often the BDO gets sort of a bit of stick, but these players have got two jobs a lot of the time, and darts kind of sometimes come second or third in terms of being able to practice. But Dave is a brilliantly talented player, and I think he'll be happy that his first game on that Lakeside stage, which is something he's looked forward to for quite a long time, is against either a Brian Locken or Christoph Schuch. And no slight on them, but looking at some of the players that were in that potential bit of the draw, like he could have got Tony O'Shea, he could have got Dirk Telnikers, he could have got Kyle McKinstry, it's not as tough a game as it could have been. And that might let him ease himself in a little bit and then potentially face Scott Mitchell or maybe Ryan Hogarth in the second round. And that could be... That's one of the standout... You see that and you think, oh, that's a game I really want to see. And it could go either way. Because Scott Mitchell is a phenomenal player. He's always great. You can never write him off. But he's not had his best year. He's won a few titles, but there's been a few tournaments as well where he's kind of not quite looked himself. At the Grand Slam, I thought he was okay, but not great. And I think you've really got to be on your game to beat Dave. I think he's a really talented player, and I want a lot more people to see him at Lakeside and see just how good he is.
Yeah, I think the thing on Dave's side as well, he's playing against these players week in, week out and beating them, so it's not like he's never played these players before. And another thing on his side, he played in the World Masters as well last year or the year before when it was at the Lakeside. So he's actually played on the stage already. So it's not like it's his first time up. He's already had that experience. So I do think he should come through his first round match. And that potential game with Scott Mitchell, like you say, it's going to be probably one of the games of the tournament. Moving into the final bit of the bottom half of the draw, Jim Williams, a number 3 seed. He will face either Roger Janssen or Wouter Vaas, the guy from the Netherlands there. And you fully expect Jim to come through this, really, don't you?
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think Roger will probably win that prelim. But yeah, Jim's got a really good chance this year to make an impression. I'm not sure what his plans for Q School are. He might be looking at it, I'm not too sure. But he's definitely got a very good chance, and you would expect him to come through that. And if he does, he'll be playing either Dan Day or Dean Reynolds.
Yeah, Dean Reynolds is a funny one, really, because he's got huge talent. I mean, he won the he could actually qualify for a PDC tour card through the PDC development tour. He actually turned down a PDC pro tour card and decided to compete on the BDO tour instead, which was I'm not saying it's a baffling decision, but it's a strange one. You don't really see a lot sort of going the other way.
Yeah, he wanted to. I think his reasoning at the time was he wanted to improve his consistency, which is an admirable ambition. But he's not really managed that, and he's had quite a poor year. I think he reached one final, but he's not had a very strong year. And he's going up against Dan Day, who is a lovely bloke, and Dan's had a really good year as well. He qualified for Lakeside last year, got a taste of it, and he's had a really strong year this year. He's won a couple of tournaments. He's become a dad again, and I think Dan's probably the favourite there, and I think Dan against Jim in the second round is another tie that I'd really look forward to, because I think could go either way.
Yeah, what I was talking about Dean Reynolds there as well, I think if he got his tour card now, I think it might be different, because back then there was restrictions on the BDO. You couldn't play in the challenge, you couldn't do anything, it was either one or the other. But now with all these restrictions and bans lifted, I think I think it might have been a bit of a more open decision. Like you say about Dan Day from Romford in Essex, he's a very nice lad. I've got a lot of time for Dan, and he has had a great year. I've seen him in an exhibition recently with Glenn Durrant, and he was pushing him all the way. I think it was a best of five match or something like that. There was something like 7 or 8 180s in there. And he is a really nice lad, and he really has got the talent as well. And yes, it should be an epic round two clash with Jim Williams, potentially.
Yeah, I think it's a really strong competition, and I think there could be some shocks in the first round. And thankfully, there's a good TV deal organised now with Eurosport and Quest, so everyone will be able to see all of these games as well, which for a period was sort of all up in the air.
Yeah, now quickly moving on to the women's draw, Andrew. Just running through the bracket order. Lorraine Winstanley, the number one seed, takes on Casey Gallagher. Now, Casey Gallagher, if you remember last year or the year before, knocked out Dieter Hebben in round one. So she can produce it on the Lakeside stage.
Yeah, and I think Casey actually beat Lorraine in the semi-finals of the World Masters not that long ago. Casey's a really good player, and so's Lorraine. And I think that one... It's a really hard to call a winner there. You'd probably favour Lorraine because of her body of work over the year, the amount of tournaments she's won. But yeah, I think that's a not an easy game for sure for either winner.
Yeah, and she could face off with either Trina Gulliver or Karolina Podgorska from Poland.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Podgorska, as I said. I think she's really talented, and I think Trina is another one who's consistent, and she's racked up points, and she's been a phenomenal stalwart for the ladies game. But I think she's perhaps not quite got the sparkle that she had a few years ago, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Karolina beat her and then go on to face one of the Lorraine or Casey in the second round of what should be a really barnstorming affair.
Yes, looking at the draw, I think out of the 8 seeds that are there, I think easily four or five seeds could tumble the way the draw is looking, because Eileen de Graaf next, the number 5 seed, takes on Paula Jacqueline. Eileen probably slumped slightly because she wasn't at the very top of the game. She was really challenging for the TV title. She sort of tailed off slightly, but Paula Jacqueline is another one who's been on the up. She's playing some solid darts at the minute.
Yeah, for sure. I think, she, as you say, probably favour Eileen in that one, but if she's not on her game, which she's been a bit inconsistent this year, I wouldn't be shocked to see maybe Paula knock her out.
And then we've got the number 4 seed, Anastasia de Bromislova, just qualified for the PDC World Championship. She takes on Laura Turner. Laura's just won her first BDO ranking event, you can't really write Laura off 100%. She has got an outside chance if Anastasia is not on her game.
Especially if kind of the PDC World Championships maybe doesn't go that well for Anastasia, or it takes a fair bit out of her. Because if she's, say, to beat Ryan Joyce in that kind of first round game and then go on, it's another set of prep and another few days, and then you've got a bit less time off for kind of Christmas and so on. So, yeah, I wouldn't write Laura off at all. I think she's really talented. But, yeah, I think the way Anastasia is playing, and the other flip side, that PDC thing could just be all the motivation she needs to just kind of really push on again and demonstrate her abilities.
Yeah, it's an extremely short format as well, Andrew. Anything can potentially happen. The best of three sets, anything can happen. If you have a good first set, come out of the blocks very well, then there's no reason why Laura can't advance to round two.
Oh, for sure. But again, yeah, if you have a slow, as well, especially if Anastasia has a slow start, yeah, then there's no reason at all why she can't kind of show the form she's shown on the non-streamed events all year and really make a name for herself on a platform with a bigger audience.
And the number two seed, four times world champion Lisa Ashton, takes on the Japanese Mikuru Suzuki, and we spoke about her earlier about how good she can be, and that she could easily come. I'm not saying she'll easily win, but there's every possibility that she can see off Lisa Ashton. Like you say about the PDC World Championships, it depends what happens, how far Lisa can go, because the way the draw is looking for that competition, she could go through a round or two.
Exactly. And I think if Lisa's not 100%, Suzuki's got a phenomenal chance. But even if she has, I think Suzuki's a really, really talented player. But she's just been predominantly based in Asia and doing a lot more soft tip stuff. So maybe a lot of people haven't seen a lot of her, but she is prodigiously talented. And I think that game, Ashton-Suzuki, would be well worthy of a final. And it's a real treat of a first round game.
And next we have the number seven seed, Sharon Prince. She takes on Roz Bulmer. I think there could be a potential upset in this one as well, because Roz Bulmer has had a solid start to the year. She's had her ups and downs, but she can be a very consistent player on her day in a short format. If she comes out firing, then she could advance to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Roz had a really, really good showing at the World Trophy. She beat Dieter, and she beat a couple of others as well. I thought she was really good in that tournament. And Sharon's a very solid player, but she's not always great in the opening round. And so I think, yeah, Roz has got a really good chance as well of springing a surprise.
Yeah, and just looking at the bottom half of the first round draw, Fallon Sherrett, the number six seed, takes on the Aussie Corinne Hammond, who reached the final. And there could be another upset on the cards, because Fallon's been... She sort of won events after, I think she won four or five events on the spin, didn't she, at one stage, and it was sort of looking like she was going to run away with every tournament. But then the number six seed sort of suggests that she hasn't really over the year been all that consistent, so she is beatable on a day, and Corinne will certainly fancy her chances.
Yeah, I think Fallon had that kind of period sort of May and June where she looked absolutely unplayable at the World Trophy. She was averaging over 90, which for the women's game is unheard of, really, unless you're Lisa Ashton. So Fallon was playing the best starts I've ever seen her throw. But since then, as you say, she's sort of gone off the boil a little bit. And you need to beat your best to beat Corinne, because she's a former world championship finalist. She's a really solid player. So, yeah, I think that's another really good contest. But I wouldn't be shocked to see Fallon win that and maybe kick on this tournament and have another good run.
I think, Andrew, though, the tie of the first round has to be this little final one. The number three seed, Dieter Hedman, against Maria O'Brien. Maria O'Brien is probably one of the most underrated players on the ladies' scene. She's so consistent and so good. And she's shown that in the PDC World Championship qualifier. She came within a game of beating Lisa Ashton to qualify for the tournament. Lisa fired in that 1-3-2 finish to end the match, but Maria is such a good player. She comes from Plymouth. She's very, very steady player, and she's unseeded, which kind of surprises me, because she has, despite not being seeded, she has had quite a year.
I think she was actually the highest or the second highest unseeded female player that qualified. But yeah, as we're saying, Maria got her first ever win over Dieter in the semi-finals of that ladies qualifier. And I think really that will be all the maybe the motivation she needs to challenge Dieter when it comes to that first round game. And yeah, Maria's a brilliant player. I think she showed at the World Trophy when she beat Ellen de Graaf, averaged almost 80. I thought Maria was really brilliant in that game, and she's a really talented player. And I'd like to see her get a big win and just kind of prove to people just how good she really is. And a tie, if she wins that, it's a tie against Fallon Sherrock or Corin Hammond, which is a brilliant game again, and another excellent showcase of the ladies' game.
So sort of looking at the draw, who could you see winning the ladies' BDO World Championship this year?
Oh, that's a tough one. You can't really look past Lisa Ashton. Kind of the same with Glenn Durrant in the men's game. She thrives under pressure. She absolutely loves that lakeside stage. I think qualifying for the PDC World Championship will give her all the motivation she needs, if she needed any more, really. She's phenomenally talented, but she's got a very tough first-round opponent. And I think if she Suzuki's to beat her, I wouldn't be surprised to see Suzuki lift the trophy. But I would say Lisa, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if it isn't her. And it's someone maybe like Anastasia or maybe Dieter. Maybe Dieter can finally get over the line and win the World Championship.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to go for Lorraine Winstanley, number one seed. Had a brilliant year. Despite not winning a big major tournament, I think this could be her time. And if she can beat Anastasia potentially in the semi-finals, then I think it really could be her time.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think this is probably one of the best ladies' draws in recent years. I think it's really open. And I think the investment maybe the PDC are making in those two female places has definitely, I think, kind of put the wind up most of the women that they've got maybe much more of a spotlight than they had in the past. So I think all of them will be really up for it. And I think a lot of those players have got a very good chance. And maybe as you say, I think this could well be Lorraine's big moment.
I mean, we're all just assuming that the seeds do come through. I do think at least three or four of the seeds could potentially tumble because the games are so close in the rankings and the way they've been playing in current form. There's not much separating even the top seeds from the unseeded players. So it's really, like you say, it's completely wide open.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a testament to the ladies' game, that how strong it is at the moment, that there's no gimmies, there's no easy games for any of them. And everyone's going to, it really will be a test of who's playing the best darts, not who's had the easiest draw.
And have you got an outside prediction for the men's 2019 Lakeside World Championship, Andrew?
Oh, an outside prediction. As I said, I think Durrant is, it's hard to back against Glenn. But that's the easy picks. If I'm going for an outside pick, I'm going Wesley Harms. I think Wesley's playing the best darts of his career. I think kind of the whole Fartgate thing aside, he was incredibly impressive at the Grand Slam. I think he got his highest ever recorded TV average in his final group stage game when he got over 103. And yeah, I think Wesley's playing the best darts of his career at the moment. He's won three titles this year. And the bit of the draw he's in, I think if he can get through and, say, beat Michael Unterbuchner, possibly, in the quarterfinals. That's who the seedings would projected face. If he could win that, I see no reason why he couldn't be the person who advances to the final from that side of the draw.
Yeah, I think looking at Glenn Durrant's quarter of the draw especially, there's no real players that sort of stand in it, apart from, they'd say, Andy Hamilton or Cal McKinstry. It's sort of an easier path to the semi-finals, but McKinstry or Hamilton, if Hamilton can come through that one and face Durrant in the quarterfinals, what a potential quarterfinal that could be.
I think Durrant McKinstry, I think, would be the one that really gets the pulses going. But yeah, as you say, it's hard to back against Glenn, but if you were going to put me on the fence and ask me to say, then Wesley Harms would be the person I'd go for. And I'll then await him to make another first round exit and make me look like a fool. But yes, I'll go with Wesley.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting tournament. And although it's at the Lakeside this year, there was a lot of doubt leading up to the announcement from the BDO that they decided to stay at the historic venue. Do you think it could be moved away from the Lakeside in years to come? Because it certainly looks like they could have moved it previously.
I think so. I think we're getting to the point now where the BDO needs to make some changes to stay relevant. Obviously, Des Jacklin has kind of helped them get this new TV deal that will see the three major events, so the World Trophy, the World Championships, and the World Masters, all shown on Eurosport, which I think is great for the BDO. Those players know that for sponsorship, they're going to be on TV. Those dates are now going to be set well in advance. I think the players can prepare themselves a lot more. But I think moving away from Lakeside, I think, is an important thing. I know Ross Montgomery spoke a week or so ago about maybe it going overseas, perhaps it going to Australia or America, or maybe the Netherlands, because obviously darts is such a big thing there. I think that would be great for the game. But I think even within the UK, you could move it to somewhere else. You could maybe try the O2 Indigo in London, or maybe you could take it up north, maybe go to Newcastle or Manchester. Kind of like darting hotbeds of the UK, go for those. And I think, yeah, you might revitalise interest in the tournament a little bit more. But in general, I think there just needs to be kind of better promotion of the event to ensure that the players get the crowd and that the TV attention that their performances so rightly deserve.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. The promotion is probably the part that's been lacking the most over recent times, because they've had these big venues but not sort of done well to fill them. I know the event in Preston, the World Masters, the BDO Trophy that was in Preston recently. And that was the Guildhall's a huge venue. And you've just seen a lot of empty seats there. I think if they promoted the event right, it would have been a fantastic event, because the space is there, the crowd are right on front of the stage. We had the Event City a couple of years ago. We had the World Trophy. That was quite popular, actually, because the venue, again, is a very, very big venue right in front of the stage. So I think they will get it right, because they've just brought Des in now. So he's had a lot to organise, because he did really get left in the lurch, really, because he's had so much to organise, so close to Lakeside as well. People sort of asking for an announcement, players and wanting to know where the event was, if it was happening, to book hotels, etc. So he's had a lot to do, and fair play to Des, because he has done it well, to be fair. He's organised it. He has a lot of changes in mind, I assume, because he's working hard now behind the scenes trying to organise next year, and who knows where the events could be next year. And I noticed the social media side of things is getting a lot better. The website's getting... They've just launched a new website that's coming on nicely. So the standards are set there, so it's just about keeping it and improving and see where we're at, really.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely going to be some teething issues, but I think it'll be interesting to see, especially after the World Championships, how kind of Q School pans out, and whether maybe you see a few more players doing what kind of Andy Hamilton and Wes Newton have done, maybe going the other way for a little bit to kind of get back to basics and kind of find their roots a little bit more. Because if you lose in a Challenge Tour event, or you have a poor weekend in the Challenge Tour, you might not play really competitive darts for another couple of months. So if you move over to the BDO, you can pick and choose where you play. You can play in some lower ranked tournaments against perhaps slightly a weaker field, but get some points on the board and build the confidence, because the confidence is a massive part of it as well. Especially, I think, for Wes and Andy, their confidence was shattered by the time they'd lost their tour card. So I think this year's been a rebuilding process for them. And it'll be interesting to see whether you see some of the PDC guys, if they don't get a tour card, maybe come over. Maybe someone like Robbie Green, former BDO player. He's on track to lose his tour card. If he perhaps decides to come back to the BDO and find his form again, I think there'll definitely be a place for him. And I think the BDO will probably be stronger for the changes Desert tries to make.
Yeah, speaking of Robbie Green, I was actually talking to him a couple of days ago, and he's really in... He's recovering from a knee injury. It's a knee operation. It's been a really, really tough time for Robbie at the minute, because this injury is setting back so much. It's his standing knee, so he can't really... he tried playing a game, and he had to sort of pull out of the game because he was in that much pain. He is slowly building back. I think he's taking a break for Christmas, so he probably will lose his tour card, but he's such a talented player. We've seen what he's done, and he's such a good player.
Oh, exactly. And I think the changes they're making, and maybe the example that Andy and Wes have set, is that the BDO might actually be a really good alternative for players moving forward to kind of get their mojo back and get a bit of money out there, but more importantly, get their form back on track. And with this TV deal announced, there are fixed TV dates that they can aim for qualification for.
Yeah, I think the old rule where the with regards to PDCQ school, I was discussing this in the last episode. Jamie Hughes had such a tough time. Obviously, decided to go to Q school in January. He played well, just over the 4 days. He probably just missed out, but he played the first four Challenge Tour events at the start of the year. Then there was sort of a 3-4 month gap. Played another lot of events, and there's another 3-4 month gap. So really, he was frustrated because he's not really played that much darts over the course of the year. I mean, he come very, very close to actually getting a tour card for the Challenge Tour, because he won a Challenge Tour event. I think then he went on to reach the semi-finals of the following event, which he lost to Christoph Ratajski. We know what he's done since winning two PDC Players' Championship events, which he won £20,000 in the space of 2 days. So we know what he did. So I think Jamie will have another go at it in January. But now with the restrictions lifted, could he potentially go back into the BDO entering some events?
I think definitely. I think now the doors are open, I think that there's flexibility. It's the same with Daryl Fitton. Obviously, Daryl tried to go to Q school and then had his hip operation. And now he's been taking a lot of time off to kind of get back on his feet and stuff. But someone like him, he couldn't come back to the BDO. Couldn't replay any darts at all. And I don't think that's helpful, because darts overall is stronger if both the BDO and the PDC are strong. And obviously, we know the PDC is going from strength to strength, but the BDO is still a really good outlet for a lot of players. And I think if the doors are open, it'll ensure that no one kind of gets left behind, and players can always have a really good crack at it.
Yeah, one final thing before we do close the show, Andrew. We've talked about Jamie Hughes there. What are your thoughts? Because in the BDO, he was probably, in my opinion, the best player in the BDO not to win a big major tournament, because he did win this Zwaarder Draai Masters in Holland, which marked him as started it all off for him. But every tournament, he seemed to think, I've got the win here. He drawn Glenn Durrant, and that was he was his bogey man. They're the best of friends. They have been for years. But on the hockey, Glenn's got the better of Jamie on nearly every occasion. And he's such a strong player, though. And he's reached so many finals and semi-finals and ended up drawing Glenn Durrant. I remember the BDO World Trophy as well, where Daryl Fitton won that particular final.
Yeah.
And I think Jamie reached the semis on that occasion. And he's such a good player. And he probably is, in my opinion, the best player not to win a big BDO major.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think Jamie is a brilliant player. It was disappointing last year for him, I'm sure, going out in the first round at Lakeside to Michael Unterbuchner. But no, Jamie's brilliant. And I saw there was an event earlier this year in the PDC where he punked out sort of an average of 110. Mm. And that was a real demonstration of just how talented he is. And if he can't get a tour card, I'd love to see him come back to the BDO. But in general, I'd just love to see Jamie get that platform to really perform and show what a really brilliant operator he is up on that hockey.
And thank you very much for listening to episode 2 of Inside the BDO with Tom Beresford and Andrew Sinclair. It's been an absolute pleasure to have Andrew on board. I'm sure he'll be back on the show in the future. And thank you very much for tuning in, guys.